Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Due to the coronavirus pandemic, Irish pubs found themselves with their doors closed in March 2020. In June, the pubs, which had the capacity to serve a substantial meal, defined by having a monetary value of €9, were allowed to open under conditions of reduced capacity and social distancing. Pubs that do not serve food have been excluded from opening so far. The Last Call aims to bring some life back into these pubs through reminiscing about the history, atmosphere and ambience each of the pubs have, as well as gaining an insight into what makes them each of them unique. We also explore how COVID-19 has impacted the pubs, their staff, families and customers, and how we can support these pubs in a difficult time for the industry.
We would like to thank all the publicans, family members and business owners who have contributed to this project. And to the pubs who felt too angry, negative and downbeat to contribute, we hear you, we understand and we support you. Tom Ryan of Phil Grimes Pub outlines how he acquired the bar and gives us a fascinating insight into some of the local history of Johnstown, where the pub is located in Waterford.
This here is an insight into the typical tangents that would be heard from a high stool at the end of the bar in Phil Grimes on a regular basis prior to the pandemic.
Sure. I'm here hopefully, I was hoping to celebrate 21 years in business this year, but it's been a strange one there, so this year, so the celebration will have to hold off for a while. But previous to me, the name of the pub that's still above the doors, Phil Grimes, who bought the pub in 1962 until I came along in 1999, and himself and his wife and his daughter ran the pub for the previous 30 years or so. And then previous to that, it was the Greyhound Bar, or Sheridan's Greyhound Bar, I should say, for a short-lived period of time. And an old spinster had the pub, a namesake of mine, Mrs. Ryan. And around the turn of the century, it was Lacey's, which was, like most of the pubs at the time, a grocer stroke pub. So most pubs had a secondary kind of side of business, whether it was just selling bags of coal and paraffin or bags of slack. And then maybe the next pub up the road sold a bit of hardware or a bit of animal feed or pig feed. Or some of the pubs, would you believe, used to sell potato skins, bags of potato skins to feed pigs as well. It's a pub. The building itself is a pub, nearly 200 years, and the original part of the building is a little bit older than that, so it's about 250 years old. Now there's lots of bits and pieces built on over the years and bits and whatnot, but the area it's in here was a little town in itself, Johnstown, hence the name. So it had a big mill here. It had the gasworks for Waterford, and South Kilkenny was on the street here. And the original Waterford Crystal Factory, when it went to bigger production, was in Johnstown here. And then probably the busiest thing of all was the City and County Infirmary. Before the Arkeen Hospital was built, that was a TB hospital, it was built in the 50s. And then it went on to become the A&E and everything in Arkeen. But up till that, the emergency ward and operations and was in the infirmary here. So it was kind of a little hive of a town outside of a town, outside the walls of Waterford City. So there was vegetable shops, there was a farrier, there was a blacksmith as well. And most of the houses on the street, the windows have gone back to household size windows, but they would have been initially shops of different sorts. And when the medieval walls were relaxed, post Cromwellian time, I suppose a bit after medieval times, the security was relaxed or whatever. I suppose during British rule, entrance, one of the busiest entrances inside the city, was the entrance over Johnstown Bridge into the. They knocked down a part of the city wall just at the bridge there, and that's where the street is. Was a busy street going into the city, you know, going in. A couple of great stories on actually the entrance to the city there. There was a sally port there, which allowed the ships there, or the boats with low hulls, to come inside on low tide inside the city walls. And then, you know, for safety or whatever, during times of attack. And then one of my favourite stories, whether it is true or not, it doesn't really matter, is that when Crotty, the highwayman, when he was hung, drawn and quartered, he his head seemingly for a period of time was hanging above the entrance there. And the dairies, a lot of the dairy maids and I suppose the horse and carts that were bringing the milk into the city had to pass underneath the arch, and Crotty's head was above it, and seemingly drops of his blood were dropped into the pails of milk. So there's probably a bit of Crotty's blood in a lot of people here in Waterford anyway. That's just the way the story goes anyway. So in recent years, I suppose the pub, there's been a few ups and downs, like every business, but overall it's given a roof over our head and provided a livelihood for myself and family, and yeah, that's a little bit of history of the pub. I'm probably missing a few things out, but.
Brilliant. Hopefully in the future we'll be able to.
I got a bit sidetracked.
Yeah, we'll be able to. But I think this is the thing, like when I'm asking you to describe Phil Grimes Pub, this is exactly what Phil Grimes Pub is to myself and Owen. It's coming in for a pint and leaving with three or four stories in your back pocket.
Tom proceeds to explain why he kept the name of the pub and how it slowly evolved into the pub we fell in love with that inspired us to start our Snowcast journey.
Well, first of all, the pub had a good name, you know, previous to me coming in, and that's one of the reasons why I felt very strongly it was important to keep the name, you know, Phil Grimes. Yeah, it had a huge sporting tradition because Phil Grimes was on the 59 team, the last Waterford team to win the All-Ireland. But it had a lot of history and a bit of, I suppose, a bit of soul to it and that. So what do you call a pub? Another name, you know, or Ryan's. There's enough pubs called Ryan's in the country. So It was a bit of a no-brainer to keep the name, and that kind of set the tone, I suppose, to the pub initially. Now there was an older clientele, like most of the business would have been an older clientele at the time, so a lot of those people have passed or are not pub goers anymore, you know. There's been a few generation changes perhaps, and in recent years, I suppose since the last recession there in 07 or 08, you know, the pub probably, you know, business was quiet, and a lot of people decided to go maybe back to cottage small industry, and one of those was food and beverage, and there was a bit of a strike up then with people maybe that were looking for something to do after the recession, or they went to a few of the small brewers came along from a period where there was only Guinness and Heineken really on the whole island. Now you have, and Bulmers, I suppose, with the cider, but so now you have the bones of maybe 35 or 40 brewers in the Republic and maybe another 15 or 20 in the north. So there's a huge amount of those that I said I would try and get their products, and thankfully that helped the business to give it a little bit of identity again, and it brought a good clientele, people that were into drinking the product or tasting the product for the flavour, as opposed to just trying to slam a few drinks into them as quick as possible. So it encouraged and it suited the pub as well, and it actually stimulated my own brain for knowledge of beer and various types of flavors and everything. So that's probably in the most recent years that's been the way the business has gone. Now we'll probably try and have to, when we get going again, reinvent things a bit and try and innovate.
Mellet's Emporium has a rich history in Swinford, County Mayo, as Marie Mellet outlines.
Yeah, sure. So we're here since 1797, so that's 223 years ago. Very little has changed in the pub in those years, apart from in the mid-80s, my dad would have done a massive revamp on the pub, where the front of the pub would have been a shop, like many pubs were. And he actually told me recently when he'd done it, people thought he was crazy. He thought that was going to be the end of Mellet's. But it was the opposite. We have boomed since then, and business has been good. We don't do food. We're a pub. Won't get a whole lot of tourists because we're not on the Wild Atlantic Way. So we'd have a really good local clientele base. Great staff. So we have 5 members of staff, and they're all very loyal to us. And one barman has been with us for almost 30 years now.
Marie here goes on to explain how recent consumer trends inform the central role the pub has in the community. As a social place, it's not just a place for pints.
And what's interesting in recent years, especially this year and last year, our number 3 beer seller is non-alcoholic beer. So that'll tell you that the pub isn't all about alcohol. It's a place that people come and they come together. And we've just got a brand new shiny coffee machine, and I'm really excited to, I think that that's going to take off hugely as well, because house parties are fine, but people like to come out and meet each other, and you don't have the stress of meeting in somebody's house. They come together here, it's warm, it's inviting, it's welcoming. We've a massive open fire that's great in the winter time. So yeah, it's kind of an all-round central focal point of the town, I suppose.
Marie elaborates on the community involvement Mellet's has had in Swinford and tells us about some of the history associated with the pub, including a long history of staying open through thick and thin.
Yeah, well, I suppose we've always been a central part of the community because we've been here for so long. We can name about 200 staff that have worked here for our family over the past maybe 150 years. So we're a huge source of employment in the town. We have an estate agent next door and just a recently closed news agency shop on the other side of the pub. So employment is huge, but also so much fundraising. We give a lot of sponsorship to the various clubs and the sports clubs, especially around the town. We'll say we have a local festival here every August, and we will give huge support to that, both financially And we'd also kind of do a marquee outside the front of our pub as well. So we wouldn't really get much business out of it. It would be packed, but it'd be more something for the whole community to enjoy. We think community is everything. As I said, you know, the locals are our business. We don't really cater to tourists because we don't see a lot of them. So we want to provide a space, kind of a nice, a warm and welcoming space for everyone. Yeah. No, it is actually, because I have all of our bar diaries dating back to around 1900. So I look through them because I have nothing better to be doing these days. Look through them all and I can't find any period of closure, maybe a week here and there where somebody would have passed away. But apart from that, we've never, ever been closed for such a long time. But, you know, like, we're a family of fighters, and actually my great granddad cheated death twice, where he was supposed to get on board a ship to America twice. And both times, as he was about to board, was called back to Swinford for some reason or another. And both of those ships were sunk at sea. So he was a survivor, and I'll be a survivor too, because the pub certainly isn't going to die with me, and I'll do everything in my power to keep it going.
Aoife Brennan, whose father owns the Kilteal Inn in County Kildare, explains their situation for us.
Sure. The pub is in a village called Kilteal. It kind of straddles the border between Dublin, Kildare and Wicklow. My dad has owned it for 31 years. Before that, it was owned by the Wolfetones, so it's kind of well known for that. It's a two-story, I think that's 150 years old, the building, and it's really a bar. We have a snug, there's a function room. There's upstairs rooms, and we have, when I say we, I mean my family, we have music lessons there on a Monday and Friday night with local cultist groups. But generally, it's kind of a very quiet enough bar. There wouldn't be a lot of passing trade. You know, there wouldn't be a lot of cars going by. Where the pub is, it's between the N7 and the N81, so there's not a lot of traffic. So that's kind of what the pub is.
We then look into how central the Kilteal Inn is to the local village, as well as some proof behind the picturesque setting she describes.
It is, yeah, it's kind of a very community-based, like there's a community centre next door to the pub, it's attached to the pub, it's not, we don't own it. There's a church in the village, and that's it. There is no shop, there's no takeaway, there's no other pub, there are businesses, but they're not regular retail or trading businesses. So it's very quiet. Monday to Friday, you could have one fella in, you could have 100 people in. You never really know. And then the weekends, you might have parties or functions on. But my dad even described it, and all the locals describe it, as an owl lad's pub. So it's kind of an open fire, stand around the fire having the crack at the end of the evening. You'd get people calling in on their way home from work for one pint, or you might have local lads coming up for a pint and then going home. But it's just kind of a social contact area for them. It's been used in films. This Is My Father, and then more recently, Blood on Virgin Media was made in the pub. So it's kind of sought out for its old world style and then proximity to Dublin as well. It's quite close to Dublin.
Aoife describes why she feels the publicans have been left down and why not all pubs can offer food as a viable option.
I think, I'm speaking for myself now. I'm not really speaking for my dad on this. Because my dad was the chair of Kildare Vintners for a long time. But I think, you know, public perception, and I would say myself as a member of the public, is that the VFI or the LVA, not so much, but it's kind of all around the smoking and the drink driving and, you know, the poor publicans. And really the publicans who are on the ground and working in the bars themselves, you know, they're just trying to keep their business going from day to day. And I often say, because I'm in PR and marketing, I often say, I wish the VFI would hire a really good PR person, because I think, you know, the people that they're putting out in front of the cameras, I don't think they really represent what the publicans think themselves. And then it's kind of a larger town publican, or it's a city publican. And then the public maybe have this attitude towards publicans. They don't really like them. They think they're greedy. And I think a lot of Irish people, a friend of mine said to me that Irish people love the pub but hate the publicans. And that's kind of, you know, the attitude that comes across, especially with around the reopening of pubs. I think one of the things I struggled with on that tweet, which it was just an observation I made. I wasn't getting into a big thing. I wasn't looking for suggestions either. But people were saying, well, why don't you get a takeaway to deliver, or why don't you get a van to pull up? I think people who are saying that are probably from towns or from city even. They don't really understand the pub culture in a small village. And we live around the lake in Blessington. The pubs in Blessington might be a bit busier, but the pubs in Ballymount, Ballynockan and Lacken, there's no takeaway, There's no shop. There's nothing else. There's a church. And that's it. So like, it's kind of, why can't you bring in a takeaway? The nearest good takeaway is 10 kilometers away in Nace. So people aren't going to come up for one pint to order food that will arrive cold, greasy, they don't want it. And then the publican has to deal with throwing it out. So it's, there's no real easy solution. I had been in touch with some food truck guys that I know from a previous job I worked at. And they would love to come and serve food out of the hatch, but they'd need a guaranteed minimum. And like I said before, you just don't have the passing trade. If it would make sense for us to do food in the Kiltie, we would have been doing it years ago, but you just don't have the guaranteed trade there.
Ed Call from Tully's Bar in Carlow gives us a look into how he sees Tully's as a bar and sets the scene for a bar set in one of Ireland's larger towns.
That's a great question. I suppose I don't think about it too often because when you're in the pubs, you're busy running them, so you don't have time to really think about what the pubs are. They just are the pubs. But Tully's Bar Carlow, I mean, it's a family operation. My mother runs it, my grandfather before her, and I work for my mother effectively, so I do the donkey work, and she shows up whenever there's a real problem. But the pub is always has been, I suppose, the ethos we strive for is that it's somewhere where everybody is happy. So families in for lunch, students in for a couple of pints after a lecture, couples coming in on a Friday night, groups of friends getting together on a Saturday afternoon, and then everybody and their mother and uncle in on Saturday night, you know. And that was Carlow, always has been. It's always had a reputation for good food and good music. And I suppose that's the same kind of feel and atmosphere we tried to bring to Waterford when we opened up down there, was a pub where everybody felt comfortable. There wasn't any kind of cliqueiness to it. I hate walking into a pub where you feel like you've walked into a private member's kind of bar or something like that, where the music goes down and everyone turns and instantly you feel like, oh Jesus, I've made a mistake here. So the bars should always, and we strive to be, just a good welcoming place where you come in, you're comfortable with whoever you're in with, but you're also comfortable with everybody else who's there too, and you could have a conversation with everybody or anybody. And that's the kind of the dream. It's not always achieved, but that's what you aim for.
Ed explains why Tully's is passionate about supporting independent craft beers and the importance for publicans to offer a diverse experience to their clientele.
Yeah, well, there's a number of reasons why. I suppose when I got back involved in the bar in a real way after college in Carlow, before we opened in Waterford, I'd been to the States and I'd been to a few other places with work and different things. And I got into craft beer myself through that, more so than through the bars when I was working part-time in college or anything like that. But I realized it was something I enjoyed, and it was, you know, something I could be kind of passionate about, something I could speak about. And so when I got back working in Carlow originally, I was looking at, we had 3 Heineken taps, we had 2 Carlsberg, 2 Smittigs, 3 Guinness taps. And there was no need. I mean, we weren't a super pub in Dublin city centre, do you know what I mean? So I said, okay, well, we need 1 Heineken tap, we need 1 Guinness tap. We freed up 11 lines and we started putting on more interesting beers. And it just, we hit it right at the right time with the kind of growth of smaller independent craft breweries, like 12 Acres was just kicking off at the time. And they're 4 or 5 miles out the road from us. Like Paddy would have drank in the bar all the way up from the age of 18, maybe a little younger, but definitely from the age of 18. And, you know, so it was brilliant to link in with the likes of him who knows the bar and knows what we're about. And, you know, it was lovely to be able to put his beers on the countertop. It was great to get in with O'Hara's again. Originally, they would have been in the bar long before my time when they started in Carlow Town. But we all know about how difficult it is to maintain your position on a counter when the big boys want to get a new product in. So, unfortunately, O'Hara's had, like, a really good offer, but back in the day, it didn't stick. But we've had them on the counter now 2 taps for the last 5 or 6 years, and you know, the industry grew right as I was getting interested in the business, and so it just felt like the right kind of industry to support each other in, that we're a small operation, most craft breweries are smaller again, and that link that you can phone or text the brewer and be like, well, what's going in the keg, what have you got going in on a brew today, can you stick a couple of kegs out for me? You don't get that with a macro operator where you just ring a 1800 number and you're on hold, and then you get through to some operator and you place your order for kegs. It's a very kind of soulless, passionless kind of thing, whereas you could spend your entire week talking to different brewers and talking about beer and what's coming and what somebody else doing, and was it any good, and was yours really as good as you thought it was going to be? You know, it's what makes the job that bit more interesting. So I suppose for me, it was all about, when I came back to Carlow, I wanted somewhere where I could drink beer that was, you know, a bit more interesting, a bit more of a flavour profile, whatever else. And the only place I could do it was in my own pub. So to be really frank, we started doing craft in Carlow because I liked it and I wanted somewhere to be able to drink it. But it just worked in that, look, it was also the right thing to do. It gave us a really strong position as our brand was then, craft. You know, it was only one place to go in Carlow to get 11 different beers any time of the day or night, 7 days a week. And we stuck with that through thick and thin, and it's definitely working for us. And it was just an obvious move then when we came to Waterford. We knew that we only needed one tap of Guinness, we only needed one Heineken. And we probably knew that we didn't maybe need a Budweiser. We didn't really need a Carlsberg. So that freed up a couple more taps. So we have 14 lines in Waterford at the moment pouring. And I think for us, not having the big fridges of really niche bottles and cans is a struggle, because we'd love to be able to do that particular piece of it as well. But there are so many really good off licenses doing that so well that the only kind of differential we can offer is fresh draft beer. And that's what we focus on. So we've never kind of gone down the road of huge amounts of can and bottle, because it has never really worked for us. You need to put in a wall of fridges to kind of have enough of an offer to compete well on it. And it's better to stick with the beer, keep it moving, keep it fresh, and keep people interested.
Ed then explains how they approached taking over a bar in Waterford's cultural quarter and why it was a natural fit for the Tully's family.
December 2015, we would have reopened as Tully's down there. So it would have obviously McLaughlin's for years and years. I feel we didn't do a huge amount to the bar. I mean, we did work out the back and we put in new kind of facilities in terms of toilets and stuff, but that was actually separate to the original bar itself. So we certainly didn't change the layout or the feel of it at all. I mean, I think we were really true to keeping, because we love, there's something very special when you walk in the door of Tully's in Waterford. It's just a warm kind of embracing space. It's so small and tight. You kind of feel, oh yeah, Jesus, this is magic. And I mean, we got that feeling the first day I walked into the pub. I was like, oh yeah, you don't need to change anything here. This is perfect. It's just, there's something about the layout, the way the bar comes around to you. It's really warm and inviting. So we just focus on new toilets, and everyone loves a clean toilet. You can't highlight that enough. And a little beer garden at the back, because from our experiences in Carlow, we knew how important a nice beer garden is. People just enjoy being outside when they have a beer. I don't know what the science is, but it definitely works. It makes it taste better.
From Phil Grimes in Waterford to Mellet's Emporium in Mayo, across to the Kilty Inn in Kildare, and back to Tully's Bar Waterford via Tully's Bar in Carlow. Next, we hear about Mother Mac's Bar in Limerick, as described by Mike McMahon.
Oh, it's madness. Complete and utter madness. I suppose, just to put it the whole thing in context, myself and my brother bought this bar in 2015. It's probably one of the most iconic buildings in the city. It's a lovely round shape. It's actually called the Round House. Big bay windows. It's not a full semicircle. It's about a quarter of a circle, but it's absolutely gorgeous. So in the bar, I mean, we're dominated by the bar counter. And then we have a smaller room in the back, which is called Peggy's Parlour, named after my late mother. And that sits maybe about 30 people. And it's more a whiskey bar than anything else. But I suppose since we started in 2015, one of the things we wanted to do was to bring on the craft beer scene in Limerick. The food scene was tremendous. We have a huge amount of local food producers, and a huge amount of internationally recognised food producers and chefs in the city. And it just kind of made sense that the whole beer side of it would come along as well. And yeah, look, we've done pretty well out of it, you know. If I'm being quite honest, we've done exceptionally well. And we have, oh my goodness, at this stage, we have 9 draft craft beers that are either rotational or seasonal. Seasonal being it might stay for a month or it might stay for 2 months. And then we have 4 permanent what are considered craft beer taps. Three of those would be from the local brew Treaty City. And the other one then would be from Kinnegar. up in Donegal, and we're quite in love with Scraggy Bay. It's probably one of the best IPAs in the country, consistently over the last number of years. Prior to 2015, I didn't really drink it, so I can't say what it was like before then. But since then, it's been pretty good. We have an eclectic mix of customers. We don't fit into an age group or an age bracket. We've everyone from 18-year-olds up to 80-year-olds. And I think that the general consensus, if you're willing to sit at the counter, and you're willing to open yourself up to the ridicule and the scrutiny that only an Irish bar can bring, we're happy to have you in. And we've a bit of crack. Look, to be honest, we enjoy a bit of crack. You'll see it on social media. We're fairly active on social media. We enjoy a bit of fun. We like a bit of crack, and we actually like taking the piss out of our own Vincent Galooly. You'll see we do a lot of stuff with him because he's down from Castlereagh in Roscommon. He's mad as a brush, and he's just up for a laugh, you know. And I think that sums us up in all of 45 seconds.
Mike tells us how Mother Max and breweries have worked together to support each other and why this relationship is so important to both pubs and breweries.
I think the very short answer is yes. You know, if we can support small Indigenous workforces and small Indigenous businesses, let's do it, right? But I think what we forget quite a lot, right? I've 8 staff, including myself. I have 8 staff in the bar. There are breweries out there that have less staff than that, you know, that are making fantastic beer and shipping it all over the country, right? And I mean, it's amazing when we actually start to put that into context. You know, there are breweries out there that, similar to the bar, basically, if there wasn't people drinking beer, they'd be done. You know, if there wasn't people enjoying their beer, they'd be done. Their families would be done. I mean, the beer that we sell puts the kids to school, puts them through college. You know, so it's very, very important that we support it. But that support is two ways. Because, I mean, if you consider one of the things we did while in lockdown, we got onto some of the breweries that we deal with quite regularly, and we said to them, I want to teach all my guys, including myself, how to brew beer. Right, so we ran a homebrew challenge just for the staff. And each one of the staff was paired up with a different brewery, and you had the likes of Kinnegar, White Hag, Western Herd, which are in the middle of nowhere in Kinmaley, County Clare, and Treaty City, who probably everyone knows because Mr. Steve Kinnean is all over the papers and all over the airwaves. The big boys in 8 Degrees, you know, who were recently bought by Irish Distillers, and then you're into the likes of Rascals, Yellow Belly, and then you have Guinness Open Gate. And for Guinness Open Gate to get involved, it was, you know what, they talk the talk a lot of the time. They say that they want to support and they're part of the craft community. They were the first brewery to come back and say, let's do it. You know, in fact, actually, I'm going to say there's two breweries there that never actually said they wanted to do this. We just kind of visited them, collected some materials and left, you know. So they never said, let's do it, but we just said, yeah, you're doing it anyway. So they've supported us, and I mean, they've supported the mental health of the staff in going through this to try and keep us occupied and keep us kind of, I suppose, keep us upskilled, because, you know, we sell beer. If we know how beer is made, we can sell it a little bit better. We can talk about it. You know, what are the flavor profiles? What causes that? You know what I mean? And it's gas, right? Because it's only when you make mistakes brewing the beer, you can really appreciate what a bad beer is. You know, and the off flavors that some of the lads have generated are just phenomenal, right? You know, as I said, if we could figure out how they did it, we could bottle them and kit them, right? We'd make a fortune selling off flavors. You know, but you know, it's great. And as I said, it's a two-way street. Most certainly, you know, I mean, I think it's very important that we support each other, especially where we are right now, because it's difficult, it's hard times.
Fergal Chambers of the Four Provinces Bar and Brewery gives us a bit of an insight into how they got the bar up and running, and also gives us a flavour of the type of bar that they have in Crumlin in Dublin.
Okay, so we're a new enough pub. We took over an existing pub that had been closed for 5 years. We have a brewery behind the pub that was opened about 6 years ago. We brew for all local businesses, like on trade and off trade. It was mainly keg beer, so obviously the closure of the pubs was a big deal. And then we opened the pub about a year ago, serving our own beer into the pub. It's a traditional music pub or folk music pub. It's very much a community pub. Even though it's an Irish speaking pub or an English speaking pub, so it's a bilingual pub. Our staff are bilingual most of the time, and we encourage community groups to kind of meet in our pub. I suppose the way I see it is you're trying to get as many people involved as possible, and not cynically just to have them in drinking, but it's also important that you trade, as you know yourself, you trade on your name and you trade on your ethos a lot of the time. So people do, you know, shop around for value, but at the same time, I think people like to know their local pub is interesting. And I think we definitely do that with our own brewery and the traditional music side of things and the Irish language side of things. So we have a lot of Irish speakers in the area as well. There's a lot of Gaelic school now. Like the area itself where we're in is a very working class area. But then it's also, you know, just on the border of a very, very middle class area. And I hate using the word class, and my apologies to anybody who hates them terms, but I'm supposed to try to describe it as best I can. And yeah, we've got a great response. And of course, there's a few people going, the craft beer, or, you know, it's too strong or too, we're not. So our whole ethos is like, it's definitely affordable. The pint is a fiver. We support only Irish companies as much as possible. So for example, all small batch companies who need our business, we don't deal at all with, we do have Guinness, after I say that, we do have Heineken, but we deal majority, we try to support small breweries, small distilleries, and it's worked well for us. We've been able to get decent prices and everybody's been happy. I suppose we deal directly usually with the distillery themselves or with the brewery themselves, so we're able to, with the contacts we have. So
Fergal Dean gives us an insight into their attitude towards local beer and how it is a driving force behind the success of the pub.
Yeah, look, we're trying to do something different. You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, you know, the local pub supports the local. Actually, they don't. A lot of the time, they don't support any jobs really, except for the people working there. I think the local pub should be actually buying locally as well. So buying local beer brewed in the area. Which is a big kind of a, I suppose it's a topic in itself, but we don't call it craft beer. We call it local beer. We don't ever use the word craft, because all it is a local business person, a local person with a family, kids and all the rest of it trying to make a living. So once you pare it down to that and take away a lot of the nonsense people associate with craft beer. So to kind of cut that out, we just use the word local.
We then get an insight into how the locals and the locality of the pub has moulded its fabric.
But yeah, we've a very interesting pub, a lot of characters in it, a lot of local dubs. It's in Crumlin, I suppose, on the border with Kimmage. Kimmage and Crumlin are very, very old areas in Dublin. A lot of the inner city people back at the turn of the century were taken out of the city and put out to Crumlin in the 40s and 50s. And they were given houses and gardens, and there's a really strong community there, so it's really trying to break into that. And the fact that I'm a Ballantyre man from down the road and hurled against Crumlin, very, very good hurling team, you know, it was good. It was a great intro for me to the GAA and stuff like that as well. So yeah, we used that, I suppose, as well. We try to, you know, show that we're, you know, we're blow-ins, but we're also trying to serve the community and do something good, like, you know.
Thanks for tuning in to part one of The Last Call, where we get an insight into these amazing pubs. We see what gave them life and made them an integral part of their respective communities. In part two, we'll explore how COVID has affected them and what we can do for them going forward, as well as some messages of hope for the future.
You can support us in delivering more content like this by heading over to patreon.com/snugcast and becoming a patron of the pod. We're also on at Snugcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.